This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We are spending more time than probably normal talking to candidates in the month of August. Oftentimes, a lot of the campaigns are pretty quiet, but one particular race that is anything but quiet this year is the race for governor. And non-affiliated candidate and former Democratic State Senator Betsy Johnson back on with us. Betsy, thanks for being on today.
Thank you for having me.
So you had a debate the other day with you and the Republican and the Democratic candidate. How do you feel like that went?
Well, I think we drew some pretty clear distinctions between the three of us, and I think it was a very useful opportunity. It was streamed live, so lots of Oregonians had the chance to see it. I think we drew very clear distinctions. I submit that as long as we go through the rest of the campaign season, Christine is going to be asserting that I'm too liberal. Tina is going to be asserting that I'm too conservative. I think it's sort of like Goldilocks. Most Oregonians are found somewhere in the middle, and that's exactly what our campaign is trying to do. So I think we've resonated with a lot of Oregonians who are looking for change. They're just fed up with the rigidity of the two parties, the extremes of the very, very progressive left, and the angst about the very extreme views of the far right. And they're looking for change and something in the middle, that's me, that will bring Oregonians together to try to solve some of the tremendous problems facing our state.
And in fact, it was fairly quick to get email reactions out from both the Democratic and Republican campaigns that each focused on you. And as you said, pointed you as either too liberal or too conservative.
Yeah, that happened. They both claimed they won. It's sort of difficult. You can't have, both of them stating that they won. I think it's clear that I'm getting under their skin with a message that says, let's include all Oregonians. As I said in the debate, imagine a governor who would say, I won't cause a bill to become law. I won't pass a budget. I won't appoint to a board and commission unless there's bipartisan support. And all Oregonians, regardless of their zip code, have a place at the table in making these decisions. If the legislature is passing legislation that's good for a handful of Oregonians, it ought to be good for all Oregonians. And I think that message is challenging 40 years of Democrat control. And I don't think that the current candidate that the Republicans are fielding is in step with the majority of Oregonians on some pretty significant issues. So I offer a logical alternative. I believe that I'm all that's standing between Tina and Mahonia Hall. And so that's the message that we tried to convey during the debates. And frankly, I think we were pretty successful in drawing the distinctions.
Now, largely, this is looked at a three-person race, but you also have the impact of the Libertarian candidate, a Constitution Party candidate, and a Pacific Green Party candidate as well. Often, folks in those parties draw small numbers, but they are pulling away from other people, which makes us seem very tight throughout the fall.
Oh, this will be tight. And I have had a Libertarian run against me when I was in the legislature. I had a Constitution Party person run against me when I was in the legislature. And I think having the benefit of all voices in this gubernatorial race is helpful. I still think that in terms of viability, that those more minor parties, as you point out, don't bring substantial numbers. So I really think what this race boils down to is Tina Kotek and me, only because the Republican registration is so low and their candidate is so significantly out of step with parts of blue Oregon. So, but you're absolutely correct, and we'll have a robust conversation about who ought to be the next governor moving from today right through to the the election day in November.
And it looks like from the national side, both the Democrats and the Republicans are paying close attention to this race. Democrats want to hold on to the long-term control with Democratic governors, and the Republicans seeing now a different race than normal and no incumbent running are going to be putting a lot of money into it as well.
Well, that's interesting because look what 40 years of Democrat control has done to the state. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I just couldn't stay a Democrat as the Democrats began to veer into this defund the police and no accountability for the decay, the social decay in Portland, functionally legalizing drugs. I mean, we're doing a better job of legalizing drugs than we are educating our kids. I just couldn't stay there. I think most Oregonians are where I am. They want to stop the political fighting that has resulted in political paralysis or one party telling the rest of the state how to do business. I think Oregonians are significantly interested in change and a new way of doing business. So this race is going to attract attention because there are three women. This race is going to attract attention because there's a non-affiliated. The last time that happened was in the 1930s when Julius Meyer was elected governor non-affiliated and got more votes than the Republican and the Democrat combined. And so we're continuing to raise money at a prodigious rate. We're up on TV talking about a message of populism and putting the people back in charge of the state. And that's what I hear wherever I go throughout Oregon, is that people are sick of business as usual. They're sick of the political extremes. They're sick of candidates that are locked into a political ideology or a rigid partisan agenda. And they want to have their voices heard. They want all Oregonians to be included in decision making. And get the people back in charge, not the doctrinaire parties.
As a non-affiliate candidate, you have a different path for the fall ballot in November. Talk about the status of getting on the ballot and the work that's got to take place to make it officially there.
Sure. I'm very proud of the fact that I will come onto the November ballot through the power of people's signatures. That means a great deal to me. That means that it wasn't, you know, the Republicans all getting together in a closed primary and picking their guy, the Democrats getting together in a closed primary and picking their guy. What this says is that people of every political stripe are signing petitions to put me on the ballot. So I don't care if you voted for Biden or Trump or you wrote in your dog. If you want a better Oregon, I would submit I'm your girl. And people all over Oregon have signed these petitions. The other day I was in the office when the mail came in, and it was in an enormous box just brimming with envelopes that were full of the petitions. And we've had people at county fairs, at festivals, at 4-H auctions, at rodeos, and the signatures are pouring in from every corner of Oregon.
Now, what's the timeline? When do you have to have that completed? When do you want to have it completed?
Well, it has to be completed by mid-August, where the signatures are submitted to the Secretary of State, who then reviews them. That's not to say that we haven't had people going over them for accuracy and conformance with the law, and we have a very high accuracy rate. So we will submit them to the Secretary of State for review, and there's a legal threshold that we have to meet at about 25,000. We'll have way more than that to first of all, demonstrate support for the campaign and my candidacy, and secondly, to act as a shock absorber against any signatures that are disallowed for whatever reason by the Secretary of State.
Now, as we've gone through the past few months, periodically you're picking up endorsements from noted political figures in Oregon, past office holders, and coming from both of the parties. Give us kind of an update on that.
Sure. The one that I think was the most moving to me was Governor Kulongowski, former Oregon Governor Kulongowski, and former United States Senator Gordon Smith. And the two of them saying in a joint release that I'm a good Democrat and I'm going to stay a good Democrat, and Smith saying I'm a good Republican and I'm going to stay a Republican. But we are putting aside our party allegiances. We are putting aside our partisanship in the interest of the state of Oregon. We think that a nonpartisan governor, a non-affiliated governor, is exactly what Oregon needs during this very critical time. The endorsement that my staff liked the most was Shanley, the voice of the Blazers. And Shanley cut a great ad for us that ostensibly says, this isn't the year to sit on the bench. This is the year to suit up and get in the game. Support Bessie. So I was very pleased with that. And Shanley called the Blazer championship the day I graduated from law school. So the Shans will have a special place in my heart my whole life. Great guy, great Oregonian.
All right, back with more in a moment. Former State Senator Betsy Johnson, non-affiliated candidate for governor of Oregon. They interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com inside Douglas County on News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming up this afternoon at 1. KQEN Local Talk at 4. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show with Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt. And on tomorrow's program, State Representative David Brock Smith will be on Inside Douglas County. Former Democratic State Senator Betsy Johnson, non-affiliated candidate for governor, on with us now. What are the top issues you're hearing about from voters as you go around the state these days?
Well, I think if you posed this question to each one of us that's running for governor, you'd hear the same thing. It's certainly homelessness. It's crime and a sense of lawlessness. It is our education system failing too many kids. It is the lack of respect by the legislature for jobs and job creators. And it is well-fed state government not performing on behalf of Oregonians. And I would call out as Exhibit A, many state agencies haven't gone back to work. And I'm talking to working Oregonians all over the state who have gone back to work. They're taking reasonable COVID precautions. But state government is basically not even showing up. And look at the number of things that over the last 2 years have either been bungled and done badly or haven't been done at all. It's time for government to get back to work.
And
So those are pretty much the top issues I'm hearing.
And talk about your background and how you feel that will help you if you're elected.
Sure. I first of all got out of school and worked for the Multnomah County Courts. And so I was there for 4 years. And then when I graduated from law school, started a helicopter company. I flew for that company for 20 years. I own the company. I don't pretend to say that having a handful of employees is analogous to multiple thousands, tens of thousands of employees working for the state of Oregon. But I bring with it an ethic of a business person, a small business person. I've been responsible for paychecks, a health care plan. I'm one of the only guys in the legislature, in my caucus at least, my former caucus, who signed both the front and the back of a check. And I will certainly bring that ethos of can do, want to, will do business, serve the customer, pick up the phone, take the order, have people that are enthusiastic about the work of government, which I submit is serving Oregonians. And that attitude has been startlingly absent. It was absent before COVID, and it was accelerated by COVID to a point that we frequently in Oregon, working with state agencies, start at no, and then it's convinced me to get to yes. I want people working for state agencies that'll start at yes until they get to an insurmountable obstacle that ends a project or makes it impossible to move forward. For too long, government has been part of the problem in retaining and recruiting businesses or driving projects to successful conclusion. We've dithered around for a decade on building, longer than that, on building a new interstate bridge. It's time to stop planning, stop having these huge meetings to talk about stuff. It's time to do stuff with a sense of urgency, and that applies to solving our homeless crisis and dealing with crime and lawlessness, dealing with education. That need for a sense of urgency suffuses everything. And I would have an expectation that government would step up, get back to work, and step up and help Oregonians.
If you're elected, you walk in the door next year. What about your first month? What have you anticipated or thought about trying to accomplish as quickly as possible at the front end?
Well, it's getting a team pulled together that has issue area experience and knowledge. I am less inclined to reward political friends as I am to have, as I said, can do, want to, will do people with issue expertise. It's getting a team that's functional, that answers the phone, that figures out what the customer wants. I mean, I'll give you an example. I had the opportunity to talk to the guy that ran Intel in Oregon. And during our meeting, the question arose, what could have been done to stop Intel from taking a big chunk of its business portfolio to Ohio? And I'm paraphrasing, so this isn't an exact quote, but the answer was basically, somebody in Salem needed to pick up the phone and find out what the customer wanted. So early on in a Johnson administration, I'd want to find out, what does the customer want? And I'll submit to you, they want less regulation. They want government that works when people expect it to work. I'm thinking about getting unemployment checks out and the failure that was. They want government that works. And I think that we can achieve that. So I would be very interested in setting a new tone, making sure that we had the right managers associated with the right agencies. And if agencies are not performing or have lost the confidence of Oregonians, the directors probably need to think about doing something different. I'd want to do some very aggressive audits that are not politically spun audits, but are real honest-to-God audits that say, how did we spend all this federal money that sloshed through Oregon's budget? Did we move the dial on problems that we were trying to solve? Do we have things to show for the investment of taxpayer money? And I don't care whether it's state or federal taxpayer money. Do we have benefits to show for the expenditure of money? Are we just creating, for example, more 501c3 not-for-profits to talk about homelessness, or are we actually getting people off the street? Those would be the kinds of things I'd want to talk about early on. I'd want to make sure that our schools are safe. I want to make sure that in consort with classroom teachers and parents and school boards, that we are providing the kind of mental health care that we need in our schools, that we have school resource officers and school nurses and mental health experts. I'd want to get some kind of a baseline to find out how much damage have we done to our kids in 2 years of enforced isolation. I'd want to make sure that we were prepared if there was another pandemic and we didn't have the chaotic episodic response that we had to COVID. So there's going to be a long, long to-do list. And I think that the attitude of an administration or a company starts at the top, and I'd want to set a new attitude for Oregon. We're open for business. We like our job creators. We want to end homelessness. We've got to help Portland out of the ditch. If Portland fails, Oregon can't succeed. And so those would be some of the early, early things to get cracking on. And then start getting a budget ready, because this federal money isn't going to last forever. And I think we've got to do more to have a more resilient state budget than just get the money from whatever source, spend it all, and hope it keeps coming.
For Douglas County residents, what issues that are big in this area, natural resources and things like that, can you address and look at as well?
Absolutely. I have represented in the legislature a natural resource-based a group of constituents. They log, they fish, they dig aggregate. And those are honorable, well-paying jobs. And I would continue to support that. I think we seriously need to look at some of the stuff that the Board of Forestry is considering that will put timber supply off limits. I want to try to preserve what we have left of a noble industry, the timber industry. Down in the southern part of the state, you have enormous problems with the proliferation of illegal drug operations, marijuana mostly, and all of the concomitant problems that go with that. I mean, in Josephine and Jackson County, the paucity of water and now stealing water out of anything that can impound enough water to take back and pour on marijuana plants. I think for the benefit of the growers that are in the legal system, trying to curtail the illegal system is very important. You've got law enforcement issues, but I would be very supportive of natural resource industries and businesses.
All right, out of time for now. We'll talk again soon. Candidate for Governor Betsy Johnson, thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking the time.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.